A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 1, 1992, in the series Jesus' Way, entitled His Way of Compassion with Human Dis-Ease. The scripture reading is Matthew 9, verses 18 through 38. The text for the sermon is Matthew 9, verse 36. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Well, I told the Stevens workers that the ministers that I didn't really know what they might expect this morning. It's one of those days when it seems as though I may be suffering from the effects of my age. I had a little baptism to perform in the chapel between services, and Peter was there, and one of our elders, and the parents and grandparents, and I reached for the liturgy and reached in here to get my glasses in my glasses case and said, "Oh my goodness, where have I left my glasses?" And Peter said, "They're on your nose." Now, you can laugh, but that's serious. That's serious. Well, it shows that they are effective. I mean, you can look right out over them and just not know they're there. And they're rather light, and I have a substantial nose, so I suppose. Well, this is week four of our study of Jesus' way. The way that Jesus was, the manner of Jesus' life, the mode of Jesus' behavior, the nature of Jesus' ministry. And we have noted that Jesus struggled to find that way. It wasn't so easy. It wasn't automatic. He had to find his way. And he struggled in the wilderness. He was tempted to use the powers that were his in sensational and self-serving ways. John the Baptist had no doubt been an influence on him, wanting him to call down the judgment of God on the wickedness in the world. But Jesus appeared in his hometown in Galilee, determined now by another mode of ministry, he would proclaim the grace of God. He would speak of the nearness of God. He would bring healing, liberation, freedom. He would announce the favor, the day or the year of God's favor. And he did. Not to the liking of, first of all, his hometown crew. And we have noticed in the last couple of weeks that Jesus was a stranger and an alien voice. He didn't fit. He didn't fit the established, institutionalized religion of his day. He knew that threat and condemnation never changed anybody. He knew that it was only the announcement of grace that could affect an inward transformation. And so he went about embracing those who thought all was lost and hopeless. And he brought them hope and new life. In his ministry, he ran up against the ingrained traditionalism of his day. He challenged the dominant consciousness of his day. He ran counter to the conventional wisdom of his day. And in doing that, he created offense and was marked for disaster. In painting him that way, I think I am being honest with the gospel, but in painting him that way and trying to see him as he would be even in our midst, an alien and a strange voice, I don't want the portrait to be complete before I have painted in that which was so fundamentally true of him. Jesus loved people. Jesus was an incurable lover. Jesus was full of compassion, and his whole life was a ministry of giving, of affirming, of healing, of helping. Jesus was compassionate. Jesus loved people. Jesus looked at the human situation and was not turned off by it or disgusted with it or angry at it. Jesus was moved with compassion at what he saw. Human dis-ease. Human dis-ease. And it was all about him. And it's all about us. What a variety and diversity of human dis-ease there is in our world and even in our lives. And sometimes we grow weary of dealing with all of that. Sometimes we'd like to shut ourselves off from it. Sometimes I speak about having compassion fatigue. But not so Jesus. He just kept on loving and giving because people moved him. He identified with their pain, and he gave of himself in order to be present to them in their distress and their dis-ease. Jesus was a healer. When you read the lesson of this morning, a week or so ago we had from Mark's gospel those stories, conflict stories, bang, 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 bang. Jesus always in an adversarial position. And the gospel writers did that. They would gather the material of Jesus' life as they remembered it and as it came to them in the oral tradition, and they put together their gospels, gathering material, like material together. Here Matthew gives us a whole string of marvelous healing events in Jesus' ministry. I don't think it's like Jesus got up and worked from 8 to 5, just going around all these healings here and there, every place, every day. But definitely, as he is remembered in the Gospels, he's a healer. And Matthew gives us this story. An official in the synagogue's little girl is deathly ill, and they call Jesus to come and lay hands on her, and then she dies, and he brings her to life. A woman with a hemorrhage of decades touches the hem of his garment, and she is healed. Blind men are given sight. One possessed of a demon is released and freed. All of these things were remembered of Jesus as he lived prior to his death. He was a person who went about touching human need, responding to human distress, responding to the pleas of those who look to Him as a possible Redeemer and Savior from their trouble. The word salvation is used here because what the Gospel writers are telling about us about is that whether it was the woman with the hemorrhage or the blind man or the person possessed, people were not well. They were unwell. And being unwell, they were unsaved. And in this passage, we have the Greek verb for salvation two or three times, because what Jesus was doing, according to the Gospel writers, was to bring salvation to people. That salvation involved the whole person. The nice thing about the Gospels is that you can't make any system out of it. Sometimes Jesus touched people. Sometimes He just spoke to them. Sometimes they manifested faith. Sometimes they didn't even know the thing was going on. It was going on apart from their knowledge. But Jesus was a holy man through whom the Spirit of God flowed, and Jesus healed people, brought them to wholeness, made them whole, made them healthy, saved them. Jesus wasn't the only person in His day who did the things that He did. Others did it too. He was in a kind of charismatic tradition. He lived in a world which was aware that there was a transcendent power. And the people of His day never questioned whether or not He healed, gave sight to the blind, and drove the demons out of those possessed. They didn't question that. His enemies said He did it in the power of the evil one. His friends said it was the power of God. But His friends and His enemies all agreed that Jesus did these things. Now, I love Jesus for doing that, but He's a stranger to me there too, because it's so hard for me to understand that power of God that affects something as dramatic as a physical healing, or even in the case of this daughter of Jairus, bringing her back to life. You see, I'm a modern person. I live after the Enlightenment of the 18th century. I live in the wake of the stupendous success of Western science. I am conditioned by an understanding of reality out there as cause and effect. Come to think about it, I had another strange thing happen to me today. I spent the first half hour this morning looking across the lake and seeing Milwaukee. Well, I did. I thought it was Milwaukee. I thought it was a little bit south to be Milwaukee. Maybe it was Racine, but I have looked across Lake Michigan on two occasions and I have seen the other shore. How many of you have done that? A few of you have. Now, according to the curvature of the earth, you cannot stand on this shore and see the other shore. It is physically impossible. But I have done it. I thought I was doing it this morning. It was just that the neighbors left some lights on that aren't usually on. They reflected up against another neighbor's TV aerial. And so I saw the shoreline, but when it finally came light, it was just the aerial. But now I tell you that because it reminded me, I have seen Milwaukee. I have seen the blinker light at the harbor of Milwaukee going like this. I have seen cars go on that other shore. And you cannot physically, possibly do that. But I've done it. Now, because of the scientific potential of our day, it has been explained that that phenomena occurs through some kind of an atmospheric inversion. And when conditions are just right, so help me, it has been on the front page of the Grand Haven Tribune, so who could doubt it? You can see Milwaukee if everything is right, even though you can't look this way, but there is a kind of an atmospheric phenomena that puts it up there, and you would swear you could throw a stone over there and hit somebody fishing on the jetty in Milwaukee. Well, my point is, I am the kind of a person that would say, if it is physically impossible, then it is impossible. I'm the kind of a person that would say, if somebody's dead, they're dead. I'm the kind of a person who would say, if somebody's blind, let's take them to the doctor, let's see if it's cataracts, or let's see if there's a detached retina, let's examine this thing, but it could be that they will say that is a hopeless situation. That's the kind of person I am. And most of us are, really. When push comes to shove, we have been shaped by that kind of overwhelming climate of opinion. Now, Jesus' day didn't have that problem. They were primitive and naive. They didn't have the information we have. But you know what? What they perceived was not because they were primitive and naive and don't have the kind of information we have. What they perceived was the manifestation of the power of God in the midst of this world, in the midst of human life. And the reason I don't see it is that I am so confounded educated, so conditioned by the scientific method that has placed people on the moon, that I can no longer open myself to the possibility, not that there's another world that God must break in from, but that God is present in this reality of which we are a part, if we had the eyes to see it. Jesus lived in the flow of the Spirit of God. He was baptized at the hands of John the Baptist. The Spirit descended upon him. He ministered in the Spirit over and over again. You have it through his whole ministry. The Spirit of God through him. There was an electric power in that person. And there has been an electric power in other people in the wake of Jesus as well. But my point is this. Jesus, if we would get some appreciation for his way, we will have to see Jesus as an agent of affecting human healing and health far beyond anything that this garden variety pastor has ever been able to put his finger on. For Jesus, those healings were signs of a new world that was dawning, of a presence and a power of God that was in the process of transforming this old reality of which we are a part. We can make too much of it. The gospel writers remembered Jesus as a healer, but that's not all Jesus did, and he didn't heal everybody. There's just no way you can figure out why one was healed and another not. And then I think we need to also be mindful as we speak of this, that, for example, I have buried people who died of a disease, and they died healed. The disease killed them. But they were healed when they died. And I have known people too who have had terminal medical prognosis who are living today. But a person who has had a deadly disease and is cured miraculously is a person that will yet die. And I think in our world we need to think very clearly about the significance of our present human existence. We can't come to any clarity on issues that are tearing us apart like abortion and euthanasia because we don't think clearly about the nature of this present human existence. There are such a host of questions in the whole area of medical ethics, the prenatal care and the maintenance of life after life is gone. We have never brought in what is a theological and a religious and a philosophical dimension, and that is, what is human existence? Don't tell me what is life. I know what is life. Two cells join and there's life. Sure, there's life, but is there human existence? We don't think about that, and we somehow or other try to perpetuate this present form. Now, I'd like to stay a while, and I can talk about this as long as I suppose I haven't got the death sentence. But I hope when I get the death sentence, I hope, I don't know, I don't think any of us know, but I hope I can say, it's been a great ride, and the best is yet to be. So we hadn't ought to make too much of these healing miracles. We ought to see them as Jesus intended them, signs that there is a presence of God, a power of God that can change this old reality that has us locked in. But the thing that I want to leave you with is not just the fact that he was a healer, but that he loved so deeply. For Matthew tells us, and it's only in Matthew's gospel, that when Jesus, he looked at the multitude and he was moved with compassion. He saw people's dis-ease, restlessness, distress. He was moved with compassion. He saw people as harassed and helpless, as sheep without a shepherd. He loved people. He cared. His heart was moved. In fact, that word compassion literally means innards. Jesus' innards were stirred. Have your innards ever been stirred? That happens right here. In fact, the old English expression was the bowels of mercy. You wouldn't expect to talk about bowels any place but in the internist's office. But as a matter of fact, the bowels were understood as the seat of the emotion, the place of love, of feeling. We speak of the heart, not the blood pump, but that center in us that can be touched. Jesus was moved in his insides when he looked at people. Stark contrast, for example, to those great champions of righteousness who declared at the onset of the AIDS epidemic that it was the judgment of God and a plague on homosexual people. I suspect that becoming cognizant of that, Jesus would have opened a clinic. Because in his day, the lepers had to stay outside the camp, and when anybody approached them, they had to say they were leprous, 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 lest they spread their contagion. And I'm not talking now about wise medical decisions, but I am talking about an attitude and a spirit. Jesus cared. He didn't get angry. He didn't get disgusted. He didn't write people off. He didn't shut them out. That's Jesus' way. And Jesus is a revelation of God. Jesus is a window in the surface of things through which you can see into the heart of God. God is the way Jesus was. And you were called to be the way Jesus was. And we're all called to be the way Jesus was. That's the only thing really that makes us different, is that we don't respond naturally. We respond intentionally, out of compassion, out of love, because we've looked into the face of Jesus and we've seen into the heart of God. Grace. I can't read this thing, Peter, can I? It's so wonderful. I know, I haven't got time. It just says that sometimes we grow so discouraged with ourselves, so tired and so weary, that the person that we would be seems to elude us. And our dreams don't come true, and we deny ourselves and betray our best hopes, and then in the darkness there's a ray of light, and we hear a voice, and it says, "You are accepted. You are accepted." And we look into another face. And life meets light. Life meets life. And that is a happening of grace. And that's healing. And that's all that matters. If God is like Jesus, then we need simply to rest ourselves in that grace and be gracious. Dear friends, what else matters, really? Really, what else matters? Really?